In the stillness by the empty window, I sit in formal meditation, wearing my monk's surplice. Navel and nose in alignment, ears parallel with the shoulders. Moonlight floods the room. The rain stops, but the eaves drip and drip. Perfect this moment. In the vast emptiness, my understanding deepens. That's how we started the day. And this poem, I find it encapsulates in a way where we are now. Yeah. There's so much awareness that Ryokan is bearing witness to here in this poem. Yeah. All the things he's noticing, he's aware of, his bodily alignment, the light, the raindrops, there's just hearing, there's just sensing. He's fully, fully present. And this moment is perfect. In the vast emptiness, not bringing anything else to it. I wonder if this is all right, how long is it going to last? Yeah. And then, in the vast emptiness, my understanding deepens. So there's a really important communication here, and that's what I'd like to unpack a little bit today. Yeah. Out of this stillness, out of this awareness, this that we're entering into more and more, we're living more and more, what's coming out of that deeper understanding? Yeah. And I'm quite sure this is your experience, yeah, as the days go by. There is some more light coming in through the cracks. Yeah. There is some more seeing, understanding. You're realizing, putting two and two together, pennies are dropping. Yeah, you're just recognizing more. And this will be highlighted when we go into the third satipatthana now, mindfulness of mind. Hmm? Mindfulness of Vedana helps us to see the relationship between feelings and mental states, how unpleasant in the untrained mind determines aversion, how pleasant in the untrained mind determines craving, and how neutral in the untrained mind determines ignorance. So we're seeing conditionality at work there. And when we're working with Vedana, we're dealing with or working with both worldly and unworldly Vedana. Mm-hmm. And we're becoming more aware of the karmic effects when we react to Vedana, yeah, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant or neutral. It's the reaction, it's the attachment, the pushing away. That is going to keep us in this groove of being caught, trapped, slaves. So it's not about getting rid of worldly Vedana. Yeah? It's about the conditioned reaction to worldly Vedana. That's where this point of choice comes. So we become aware of this connection, this reaction, and we weaken. We weaken the reaction through being aware of it. Yeah. We're no longer in that moment feeding the defilements. Yeah. Defilements, greed, hatred and delusion, the kleshas. Yeah. So this is our working ground now. We're moving into looking more closely. at the kleshas, amongst other things. Klesha, K-L-E-S-A, S, plural, kleshas. So we're not feeding the kleshas, and we are strengthening the positive emotion, the awareness, the understanding, turning to the unworldly. That's what we're cultivating and strengthening. And this is the ethical dimension of Vedana, which we touched on. And we had this question about the Buddha and Vedana. So I thought some more, and we had some exchange in our team meeting. And the Buddha has a body. So of course he also has Vedana coming in through the senses. He has the body. The Buddha had worldly Vedana. The point is he wasn't reacting anymore because his mind was free of the defilements. There are many examples in the suttas where you can see that the Buddha was experiencing sensations, that were pleasant or unpleasant. There's a famous instant where the Buddha had backache, and he said to one of his disciples, "Would you continue teaching? I need to lie down." So he was obviously experiencing unpleasant Vedana there. And there are many examples of him experiencing unpleasant Vedana. There's also one where he sees one of his disciples and he comments on his beauty in two ways: the beauty of him as a spiritual being, and just the beauty of his physical appearance. So this is pleasant Vedana. Buddha seeing something really pleasant, beautiful. But he didn't then become attached to him. So that's, just wanted to add that to the question. So we've got this cross-referencing, this relationship between Vedana and Chitta. Vedana has, as we've seen, two sources. It can be bodily or it can be mental. But Vedana is experienced in the mind. Think about that. Chew on that. So there are two sources of Vedana, bodily and mental. But Vedana is experienced in the mind. And I will resist the temptation to go into that. It's really interesting. That's the thing to reflect on. And it's like, I sometimes experience Dharma life in practice, like doing a puzzle. We've got all these different parts, and now and again, you put a corner of the puzzle together, and that's how it fits. That's what it means. That's what it looks like. That's how it's connected. And that's just fun. But we're entering into the fun stage more and more. Well, not the fun stage. It's been fun. But it's getting more fun. There will be more joy. So we've been working with our mind all the time. It's not that body is separate from mind. And we've been going body, Vedana, and now it's mind. It's been there all the time. And in particular, we've been finding out how mindfulness, how the mind feels when mindfulness is present. This is part of what we've been doing. Getting familiar with mindfulness as a mental state, an inner experience. And, we've seen that there's openness there, there's softness, there's receptivity, there's alertness. This is describing mental qualities, mental, emotional qualities. There's connection, you're connected to the experience. There's a certain calmness, and it's gentle. Mm-hmm. And we also learned about the three other mental qualities that are necessary to walk the direct path. So it's not just about mindfulness per se, being present. We heard about the diligence, yeah, which we've translated into being, staying interested, yeah, keeping going, staying with it. Mm-hmm. And we need the clearly knowing. Yeah, it's a kind of intelligence, seeing, asking what's necessary, what's the situation, yeah, how, what's beneficial now to my practice in order to keep going, sampajana. Yeah. And then there's the quality of calm, yeah, which less caught up in the hindrances, slaves to the push and pull, liking, not liking, wanting, not wanting. Yeah. So these are also, we've been checking, are they present in my mind? Remember, these are what are described in the definition of the sutta, mm-hmm. which we heard again last night. Diligent, present, clearly knowing, and free of desires and discontent with regard to the world. And we had this little pithy translation of them, if you remember. So you check, is there interest in the mind? Am I present? Is there knowing? Yeah. And is there a sense of ease? We can be doing that regularly. So that's what we've covered so far. And the third satipatthana is looking more directly at the mind, or into the mind, you could say. Mm-hmm. And this is where interest becomes more investigation. Yeah. Clearer seeing, which will lead to deeper understanding. Yeah. Dharma vijaya, familiar? Dharma vijaya, investigation of dhammas, yeah, investigation of experience. It's the second of the awakening factors. First there's mindfulness, then dharma vijaya. Yeah. So investigation is really important. In order to transform the mind, we must know it, but just knowing it is not enough. And this is why mindfulness of citta, mind, heart, is so vital to our practice. And citta includes all of our internal experience of thoughts, images, emotions, moods, perceptions, volitions, mental states. Mental states, they may be calm, concentrated, or distracted. They may be of the nature, they're tight, contracted, narrow, your mind's like that, or it's expansive. Yeah? It's not a big deal to know that. Yeah. It's you sense, you feel it, yeah? You see it, you know, oh, my mind's really tight, need to go out for a walk, need to just sit down and look at the beautiful blue sky. Yeah? You know it, it's not really an arduous task. And this includes spiritually beneficial and skillful mind states. Yeah? And also the unskillful mind states of greed, hatred, and delusion. Yeah. And these mind states, yeah, the skillful, the unskillful, they manifest in attitudes very often. And that's where we pick them up. We've maybe not been so aware that's the driving force in the mind, but suddenly there's an attitude there. Mm-hmm. You might be really aware, but you're a bit, oh my God, I'm aware of this, I'm aware of that, and now I've got to be aware of eating. Yeah. There's aversion in the mind. There's an attitude of aversion, not wanting. And it's just so liberating to notice that, this push, the pull, or circling around. Yeah? Delusion is often just circling around. zoning out. And of course, these internal experiences manifest in the body, and it can also be really helpful to go there. Stepping out of the turmoil of the mind and then checking out in the body. What does it feel like? Yeah? How do you know? Yeah? Drop down into the body. Just check where it's manifesting. And of course, what I'm trying to describe here is that this awareness, we're aware of mind states, which mind states lead to more suffering and which mind states lead to liberation and happiness. Yeah, that's the whole point. That's why it's so important. And in the third Satipatthana, the Buddha's encouraging us to become aware of what's present in the mind and also what's absent in the mind, what's not there. For example, if there is clarity in your mind, part of that experience is an absence of confusion. Yeah? You're not confused. Sometimes we may not be aware that we're clear, yeah, or that we're happy. It might be easy to say, oh, I'm not worried anymore, I'm not upset anymore, yeah? I'm calmer, I'm happier. Yeah? That feeling of tightness, that feeling of, oh, I don't know, is somehow gone. Yeah. And when the mind and heart are expansive and loving, yeah, aversion is not present, contraction is not present. And it's seeing and knowing this and honouring it. These are moments you are free of aversion. And looking out for and becoming familiar with positive mental states, yeah, is a really, really important practice. It's not just about the getting rid of the ones that are in the way, that are painful, but looking out for, becoming familiar with positive mental states, giving them space, giving them attention, appreciating their value. Yeah? They are also part of your experience. The Buddha has mastered or tamed his mind. And one of the teachings he gives on the mind is what we frequently think about or ponder on becomes the inclination of the mind. Yeah. What we frequently think about or ponder on becomes the inclination of the mind. Sometimes this is shortened into what we dwell on, we become. And what he's pointing out to here are the habitual tendencies of the mind. And the implications of this are big. It is possible to incline your mind to the positive, to beauty, to truth, even if that's not your natural inclination. It's not about what's natural here, it's about what's skillful, what's going to lead us to liberation. And we can change our mind. The first time I came across this is Majjhima Nikaya number 19. It's worth knowing this. Yeah. Majjhima Nikaya number 19. It was like a revolution. It's this. Do you know? Are you a person who sees the cup is half empty or is the cup half full? Yeah, that's where this starts. How do you look at things? How do you assess them? Yeah, how do you categorize them? And my tendency, the tendency of my mind, is that I'd see a lack. I'd see what was missing, what was necessary. Yeah, this is the bane of perfectionists. This is what they do. Yeah, where improvement could be made. And if you're not mindful of that, and I've had to learn this through painful experience, if you're not mindful of that, your mind becomes quite negative and narrow and you get stuck in fault finding, and that is not a happy place to be. Yeah. And when I came across this sutta, this teaching, I thought, I can turn my mind to the positive. Yeah, I can see what's good in the situation. And that has been a real training for me. It's made me a lot happier. Yeah. Okay. Bhante says we should be watching our minds all the time. Yesterday, we heard the Buddha's teaching to Bahia, yeah, in the seen, just the seen, in the heard, just the heard, in the cognized, just the cognized. Yeah. So what this teaching is saying here is don't get caught up in the proliferation, the ruminating about what you're seeing, what you're hearing, you're commenting. Becoming slaves to these comments, to the stories, and to the views about what we're perceiving. Yeah. And this is where, you know, it can sound like a tall order, be watching your mind all the time. Yeah. But when we become more aware of this, when we take this on board, we realize just how important it is. Otherwise, how are we going to become free? Yeah. And these comments or stories or views about what we're perceiving, yeah, they might be of an emotional nature, a psychological nature, an intellectual nature. Often, it's just following habitual tendencies of the mind. Where does your mind, the way it's kind of developed, yeah, through your conditioning, where does it go to find its explanations and justifications? Yeah, and it might go to more psychological areas, emotional or intellectual. Mm. And Maitreya Bandhu, in one of his books on mindfulness, he calls the third satipatthana looking at the stories we tell ourselves. Mm-hmm. And a very simple practice. Yeah, when you're doing this, you've got your habitual response to something. It's just to stop and ask yourself, is that so? Is it true? Yeah. Is that really what's happening? Yeah. And you have to like go back a couple of steps then. You have to be prepared to be honest. You have to be prepared to let go of your view, yeah, and what you've created in your mind. Because papancha has an element of distortion. Yeah. Distorting our perception. Leading to false assessments and false conclusions. And that is the cause of a lot of conflict, argument and disagreement. Mm. The sutta, another sutta, it's worth looking up, Majjhima Nikaya 18, yeah, is the Honeyball Sutta. Yeah. What we perceive, we think about. What we think about assails us. Yeah? What we perceive, we think about. What we think about assails us. Yeah? I can give it the Germans in German if you want another time. Oder was wir wahrnehmen, darüber denken wir nach. Worüber wir nachdenken, belagert uns, fesselt uns. Majjhima Nikaya 18. They're neighbours. It's 18 and 19. So, yeah. Mm. Yes. What we perceive, we think about. What we think about assails us. Yeah. So the practice is becoming aware of these stories in the mind, that they are thoughts, not facts. You know this example of waving to a friend on the other side of the road, and that friend hasn't got their glasses on, so they don't see you and don't wave back. But then, oh, she doesn't like me anymore. I waved to her the other day and she didn't react. Yeah, she just walked straight past me. And there, and you know, and it can get really big. Mm. When I was a teenager, I wore glasses and I was really, really vain. I was vain, yeah, like most teenagers are. And when I had a date, of course, at school I wore my glasses, but when I had a date, I didn't wear my glasses. And there was the place where everybody met when they had dates in the town I came from, in front of Marks and Spencer's, and your date would be standing there. And I would go and walk past because I couldn't see him. I didn't have my glasses on. And, you know, that really fed into, nobody wants me, I'm never going to have a boyfriend, I'm not attractive enough, blah, 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 you know. So, yeah. So, you know, we really have to watch out that we're not confusing these thoughts and conclusions and views about something with the actual experience. Yeah, the actual experience was, I didn't see him and probably walked past him, and then he thought, oh, well, that was that, wasn't it? And these inclinations of the mind, if they go unnoticed, unaware, they make us the person who we are. Yeah. But we can change that. Yeah. We can change. We can transform our mind. Yeah. We can become happier beings. We can become more loving beings, more generous beings, and wiser beings. Because if we keep telling ourselves the same story again and again about who we are and how we are, yeah, we're fixing, we're cementing a self-view. Mm-hmm. So remind yourself, these are assumptions, speculations, yeah, they are not the truth. And it's so valuable to recognize, become aware of the tendency of your mind. Mm-hmm. I remember in one meditation review, I'd been having reviews with someone doing this practice for quite a while. And this person said to me, Prasadavati, there's a tendency in your mind to worry. Now, this person didn't say, oh, Prasadavati, you do worry such a lot, you know. The person wasn't saying, you are such a worrier, but pointing out a tendency in the mind. And that was the first time I was able to see it. It had been a tendency in my mind. You know, not that it's completely gone, but I've clearly seen it. It had been a tendency in my mind for many, many years. Yeah. A lot of grief with my children was caused by this worry about them, yeah, worry about the center, worry about the children, worry about this, yeah. And just to see, it's a tendency of the mind. And I can work with that. I can't work with somebody fixing me and saying, you are a worrier. Mm. Yeah. And these are important moments because it loosens the identification with this particular trait or tendency. Mm-hmm. The mind is, what is the mind? It has no shape, it has no color, it has no taste. Yeah. They are temporary, ever-changing, fleeting mental events, empty, insubstantial. Mm. And we just have to become more familiar with the patterns, with the tendencies. So the basic practice is recognizing what's going on in your mind. Yeah. How is it manifesting? Mm. What does it, ask yourself, what does it feel like? Mm. What does worry feel like? Mm. What does fear feel like? How is it manifesting? You know, and as we've seen, practice in the last few days, you gauge how much you move in, when it's time to back off, what's appropriate. And sometimes becoming aware is enough. It has the effect, it lightens up, it shines light, you see, and something might change, yeah, might even dissolve. Sometimes it's not enough. And then we might bring in another dimension, it needs more, and we'd bring in an ethical dimension. For example, and become aware of the consequences. And then you ask yourself, yeah, is that what I want? Is that where I want my life to go? Becoming aware of the consequences, the implications. And this is another dimension of mindfulness here. The last words of the Buddha, which we're all familiar with, yeah, with mindfulness strive on. And this really, it really took me some time to figure this out, because he doesn't say with sati strive on. He doesn't say with sampajana strive on. Yeah. He says appamadeta. Oh, I thought I knew it. Wait a minute. No, I can't get the other word. I could sing it, but yeah. And what he's saying here, it's appamada, appamada, appramada. Appramada is an ethical dimension of mindfulness, sometimes called a guardian of the mind, guarding the mind against the unskillful. And those were his last words. And that's, again, is the Buddha pointing out, it's more than just being present. Why are we present? Yeah. To what end are we present? Transforming our minds into more skillful mental states. So we recognize what's there, we acknowledge it, yeah, and then we begin to investigate more and change our relationship to what's going on in the mind. What we're going to be looking at today a little bit more in our practice is thinking. And you might just like to take a moment to reflect what your view about thinking is with regard to meditation. You know, you've all been practicing a long time, so maybe you've put down the view that meditation means not having any thoughts, getting rid of thoughts. As long as you have a mind, you will have thoughts. Yeah? Just as the eyes see, the ears hear, the mind thinks. Yeah? It's job to think. And thinking in itself is not a bad thing. See how that lands with you. Thinking in itself is not a bad thing. The thing is, when is thinking necessary? When is it helpful? What kind of thinking is appropriate? We need to plan. We need to reflect on things, but not in your meditation. There's a saying about the mind and thinking. You can't have tea without leaves. You can't have a mind without thinking. But it's implementing thinking as something that's conducive to our practice.
I wonder if at this point you could just, it might be yes or no, I was wondering about the place for what analyse is a bit of straw, but I was thinking that words can analyse experience to see what the emotion is that a Vedana can induce. Or my thinking, you know, my what it brings to the Vedana, maybe an unpleasant one. And I was thinking, well, does that get into thinking then? But I was also wondering, well, there's a reasonable amount of assessment just as required. And I'm thinking, what do you mean by is necessary thinking? That means, you know, but then kind of over getting into a bigger story about it.
Yes.
Thinking.
Yes.
Okay.
But being clear about when is enough enough.
So I don't always have the right word for an emotion. I have to kind of think about it a little bit.
Of course.
But it's kind of just using that discernment to know.
It's a wise use of the mind. Our minds are fantastic things. We should use them. It's not about putting the mind to one side and just getting into some kind of feeling, intuitive experience. We have minds. Use them. And exactly for that purpose, for example. Okay, so in the next few days, the next 3 days, today and the next couple of days, we're going to look more at how can we do this? How can we engage with our mind and heart through the various activities of the mind and heart? A couple of very simple daily practices that you can do. When you wake, we've got our waking up in the morning, three breaths, it's a possibility. When you wake up and you've done your three breaths or you've become aware, what is your first thought? Can you become aware of your first thought? Can you catch it? And then you've got up and you've started to get dressed, have a wash, get dressed, have a cup of tea. You might become aware of your mood then. And it's helpful throughout the day to do a mood check. You might wake up really grumpy. And then later in the day you do another mood check. Oh, absence of grumpiness. And that sounds a bit clunky, but I'm not grumpy anymore. Oh, something has changed here. And you're just moving in closer to your internal experience, doing this mood check at regular intervals. Very simple. Okay, so I'd like to finish this session by reading the section on the mind from the sutta. And how does she, in regard to the mind, abide contemplating the mind? Here she knows a lustful mind to be lustful, and a mind without lust to be without lust. She knows an angry mind to be angry, and a mind without anger to be without anger. She knows a deluded mind to be deluded, and a mind without delusion to be without delusion. She knows a contracted mind to be contracted, and a distracted mind to be distracted. She knows a great mind to be great, and a narrow mind to be narrow. She knows a surpassable mind to be surpassable, and an unsurpassable mind to be unsurpassable. She knows a concentrated mind to be concentrated, and an unconcentrated mind to be unconcentrated. She knows a liberated mind to be liberated, and an unliberated mind to be unliberated.